What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, the Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iyerinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detective shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, the Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, the Scare on Prime Video, now streaming. Get in, losers. This is the Lady Killers, a Feminine Rage podcast. I'm Jen.
I'm Sammy.
I'm Rocco.
And I'm May. Our podcast is a tribute to the female-identifying killers in horror and more.
Each episode will feature us, your Supreme Court of female murderers, discussing our favorite lady killers, from your Julias and Jennifers to your Carries and Christines.
We'll tell her story, decide if it's good for her horror, and answer the most important question of all: would we die for her?
Join us on Thursdays as we pull on our sweaters, snatch our ice picks, sharpen our scissors, and honor the lady killers who live on the silver screen.
No boys were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Yet.
Greetings and salutations. You've successfully arrived at the Bloody Disgusting Network. The passage of time will now bring you to something strange, unique, and idiosyncratic. Have a good time.
My friendship to all of you precludes my involvement with any one of you. But if you want to make love, then I do too, and I'll be right there behind you.
Dun, dun, da, da. Greetings, constant listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Losers Club, a Stephen King podcast. I'm your host for today, Michael Sislak Rothman, here in Kingfield to talk about all things Stephen King and The Simpsons. Because on Sunday night, for the first time ever, The Simpsons' hallowed Halloween tradition, Treehouse of Horror, debuted a one-off installment entirely dedicated to Stephen King's It. Or more specifically, 2017's It, which just so happened to celebrate its fifth anniversary last month. And seeing how we're a Stephen King podcast, not to mention we're called The Losers Club, for Christ's sake, we felt it would be appropriate to gather around the mic, chat Simpsonia, probably go on a couple of tangents. You know the drill. But before we do any of that, let me introduce my panel from Evergreen Terrace. I've heard of Disco Stew, but Rockin' Randall? Say hello and tell us your ties to the show and if you're still a fan.
Rock, I've never heard of Rockin' Randall. My name's Rockin' Ralph. Happy to be here. Happy to talk Simpsons. What can I say? I'm a old school Simpsons fan. Been watching it since season one. Well, I was watching it since season one. I dropped off around probably season 10.
Do you remember 11. The episode that you were like, I'm done?
Well, I don't remember the exact one, but my friend Dave always had one that he cited, and I thought it was really, I remember it was like one of the last ones I watched, and that was the Loch Ness Monster episode. And I remember being like, all right, I think I didn't like say I was out on that one, but my friend was always like, that was the one, because that's when the show really abandoned all pretense of being like an animated sitcom. Like, because they always did stuff that they could only do in animation, and that, you know, is part of what made it great. But It was when the storyline sort of hinged on these fantastical monsters and, I don't know, stuff like that. And I thought that was a smart observation. But one of the last ones I think I remember watching was the, and I know this is kind of a notorious episode, is the Armin Tanzarian, like, where Principal Skinner is, like, is not Principal Skinner or whatever. I remember that one I didn't particularly enjoy, and I was checking out around that time. So, I mean, I haven't really watched a lot of Latter-day Simpsons, and so this was... But I know a lot of, I feel like the trend now is to defend Latter-day Simpsons because I think it's the blowback from people saying Latter-day Simpsons was really bad. I haven't really watched it. So this was really interesting for me because I watched a couple Latter-day eps. So I have some thoughts on that. But anyways, you know, the first 8 seasons I know by heart, I watch them after school every day, and half my vocabulary is informed by them. So,
well, you mentioned Ralph. Is that your favorite character?
He's up there. I always love Ralph. I mean, I say my cat's breath smells like cat food all the time. And but no, I mean, a favorite character, I was always Homer. I was a Homer guy.
Yeah. Oh, Homer guy. Well, never heard of him. well, down past Springfield, Illinois, that is, from Nashville, where Paul Anka's guarantees are null and void. Jen, say hello and tell us your history with The Simpsons.
Hey, this is Jen Souza T-shirt Adams, and I love The Simpsons. I remember when I was a kid, my mom worked on Sunday nights, and she did not approve of Married with Children and Living Color or The Simpsons, but she wasn't home, so we watched all of them.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, we were really into it, and I watched them. Like, I bought the DVDs before you could stream any of this,
yeah,
and I would
same.
Just play them over and over and over again. And I watched until, I think, around season 10, 11, you know? I don't remember the episode that made me turn away, but I remember the last one that I really enjoyed is the episode where Homer gets the gun, you know? And so I just run around saying, "See you in hell, dinner plate."
Did you, was Homer your favorite also?
No. Lisa was my favorite.
Same. Love Lisa. Yeah. Lisa's my favorite. That's my
MVP. I mean,
MVP.
I like Homer, but you know.
That checks out, Lisa, Jen. Girl. You are a Lisa.
I thought that she'd say Lisa. Because
we were deciding last night who we were, and you said it was Bart, which I was.
Yeah, you are a Bart.
I can see Bart, yeah.
Oh, I forgot. Milhouse is my favorite, obviously.
Oh, I was going to say. Yeah. Milhouse makes sense.
Millpool.
Great, Millpool, yeah. God, classic. Well, over in the Big Apple, hopefully. Not chuggling in a good old clavclosh. Caffrey, say hello and tell us why you maybe dropped The Simpsons, or do you still watch The Simpsons? I feel like you're off and on. I feel like sometimes you're catching up on seasons and sometimes you're not. Where are you at now?
Well, this is Dan Castellaneta Caffrey in the Big Apple drinking a crab juice, not a Mountain Dew, if you get that reference.
Well, that's the clavkolosh that I was saying.
That's what they call it. Oh,
I used to always think it was, I always thought it was crabkolosh, but I looked today and it's K-H-L-A-V kolosh. So I was like clavkolosh.
I always thought it was just called crab juice, but that makes sense. Yep. That would be called that. And then Homer says something else. I mean, Simpsons was gospel growing up, like no exaggeration. On UPN every day, come home. 5:00 p.m. They showed 2 episodes. It was kind of just always showing every episode in rotation in order. And the only reason I stopped watching it is because I went to college in 2002 and I didn't have cable or TV. I mean, I didn't need cable, but I didn't even have basic cable in my dorm room. And I will admit, even by that point, I think that was season 13. And I think at the last episode was when like Homer became a cop or something. It wasn't that great of an episode. It was like the season 13 finale.
Seems like it aged great too, probably.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Hey, ACAB, am I right? No, I'm kidding. But anyway, I remember I feeling like that seasons 1 through 12, I loved them. 13 felt a little eh. And by the time I moved to Chicago, I would check in here and there. Also, because there was an episode where they went to Chicago right when I moved there, which wasn't the best episode, but they did make fun of the improv scene of Second City, which I thought was very funny.
Well, like, deserved.
Oh, totally, yeah. And they even had, like, the guy playing piano with it. I mean, it was very, like, accurate. And then, you know, I saw The Simpsons movie, which I didn't love, and then I would check in here and there, and I wouldn't say I hated what I saw the later seasons, but it just felt a little different. Although, watching what we're about to talk about, it actually did feel pretty throwback to me and did feel like it was capturing some of that more, I don't want to say slow burn humor, but not quite as zingy. I feel like the new episodes that I've checked in with every now and then have just been very like quippy, if that makes sense. And The Simpsons was never a quippy show to me growing up. It was almost very like it took you a second to get the joke, right? Especially if you
were a little kid. Yeah, which is the greatest part about it.
Exactly. And this actually felt a little bit like that to me. I mean, and obviously there's the convergence of our interests with the Stephen King connection. But yeah, man, I mean, I was a Simpsons household, Fox Kids. Fox Kids, like, yes, the animation, X-Men, Spider-Man, but then also yeah. I was a Fox kid who I loved Herman's Head, Down the
yes,
Shore,
loved
with the
Herman's
great theme
head.
Song. Down the
Wait,
Shore.
Wasn't
starting
Herman's
guy
Head, isn't that the... show that no that was, I was thinking of Dream On with the boots. I don't know why I can
Herman's
them.
Head has William like, Ragsdale from yes. Fright Night
because I was and just like wait Herman's Head there's boobs in that but I was thinking of Dream On.
Brian
I was
Ben
like, why is that on Fox Kids
Capital Critters you name it I was down
oh, I
for all
Capital
the adult
Critter.
I and Ooh. I
what about Eek the Cat you like Eek the Cat
love
oh,
Eek
the
Cat
man
Eek
you're taking me back
who yeah. are those bears that Eek the Cat the Huggy Bears or something it was like a bear franchise that Eek loved. And there's an episode where they remember. Help him out, and one of them is like German, and he reaches down and says, "Come with me if you want to live." And I thought that was like such a funny Aww. Thing as a kid. I felt Arnold. Cool because, weirdly enough, I felt like I had friends and family members who their parents would let them watch like 90210, but they wouldn't let them watch The Simpsons. Like The Simpsons yeah. seemed so taboo. So I always felt like a kind of a cool kid that we were such a Simpsons household. And it's the only show where I've seen 13 straight seasons of it, and that there is still much more I haven't seen than I have seen.
It's so crazy to think, yeah.
I know, and I mean, me and Flieger used to, like, do Simpsons trivia at lunch. I mean, I was just such a hardcore fucking fan, and this made me want to go back and rewatch all of it, but I'm like, that's 21 seasons.
It's a lot.
I don't know. I know Justin did it
Justin just
recently,
did it.
So.
Yeah, Justin just yeah. did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, he did during the pandemic. Justin watched every episode. So
it's great background. Like, I've put it on and just like all of a sudden I'm through four seasons while I was working.
Oh,
on
yeah.
Something, but, yeah.
Yeah, but knowing Justin, he probably like didn't have his cell phone on and just was yeah. watching it. like the gif
no
of Lenny when he's sitting oh, yeah. there like this. Like, that's probably what I imagine.
It's
he's
like
doing.
When Milhouse is playing Bone Storm and he's just yeah. in a chair with like his hair yeah. back. Just nothing else. But I've thought about going back and watching at some point because it's such an integral part of my childhood. Like Randall was saying, I think it's probably responsible for my vocabulary and how I yeah. feel about pop culture and the things I like. So anyway, I could go on and on for all
well,
I can.
Well, who's your favorite, who's your soulmate, your Simpsons soulmate or Springfield soulmate?
I mean, it's funny because growing up, I feel like I always, you know, I felt like I maybe wanted to fancy myself as a Bart. But if I think about the characters that genuinely make me laugh, it's like Milhouse, Flanders, like the Simpsons does the quote unquote nerds really well, and they make them really like honestly Flanders I think has a super interesting character arc for many many reasons and I just think I think about him when he's in the musical version of Streetcar Named Desire and having his yeah. shirt off and he's buff
just
like ripped. what a great like character moment for him yeah so I yeah I'll say Flanders it's I like Otto a lot too I don't know Simpsons Otto's does funny. Misfits really really well so
yeah
well, you love yeah. a misfit for sure
I do
and I like a misfit too which is why at my side the itchy to my scratchy the scratchy to my itchy Ralph Wiggum's best friend mm-hmm. Sammy say hello and you're a relative newkomer to
yes,
the streets
I
of Springfield
definitely am. I am Sammy Wiggle Puppy so nice. I had
is that
never
a late
seen...
period reference
no that is early
it's,
on
it's my favorite I literally named my dog walking business Wiggle Puppy Walkers after the episode yeah. like my business cards say Wiggle Puppy Walkers with Wiggle Puppy on
it's,
the card
it's is Ralph's that the little... imaginary friend
oh I didn't know if it was Martin's like toy dog when they go to the Sun Sphere or whatever
oh man Martin is such a good character too yeah, sorry Martin's I'm just really great character
it's Martin an episode Prince. Where like he's Ralph's just running around in a circle it's like barking
when, it's when Bart's friends hangs
oh,
out
right,
with
right,
Ralph
right. Okay.
And it's like oh what is he doing and he's like oh he's chasing Wiggle Puppy
oh that's just Wiggle Puppy
oh, that's
like,
just Wiggle Puppy
he
Him
just barks it, I just fucking I lost yeah, it so yeah. I had never seen an episode of The Simpsons before 2 years ago
yeah. oh wow
when it came to Disney Plus which is crazy because it wasn't that I was like not allowed to watch it or anything and I love animation I just never watched an episode I just didn't think it was for me I guess because it was so popular and
you also
I had,
like, colossal
born when the good
exactly
were
yeah I was born in 93 so by the time I was like coherent enough to watch it everyone's complaining about how terrible it is now so I was like why am I gonna yeah. do that and it was like not super accessible because I was like, I'm not going to go buy this box set for this thing that I don't know if I like or not. And so when it came to Disney Plus and it was during COVID, Flieger was like, you have to watch, like you guys showed me your favorite episodes. Yeah. And I just fell in love, like bought t-shirts. I'm wearing a t-shirt right now. I have an itchy, scratchy t-shirt. I loved it. Yeah. And now I'm like watching all of them trying to catch up because you've just only showed me like the best of the best. And so I think I only have that in my head now. Like, oh, these episodes are so great. And now when I see any new ones, I'm like, ugh.
Well, it's like you could see the quality dip. I mean, it's so strange when we were binging these together. It was wild to me because I had the DVDs too, Jen, but even with the DVDs, you still had to wait between seasons.
Yeah.
So it kind of felt as if, you know, you were lingering around with those episodes. Because when I would buy like I bought the first 7 or 8 seasons, I think, in DVD. And I think I just devoured those episodes because I also had those on recorded. But when we were binging them, what I noticed was that you were like flying through the Golden Era within like a week.
Because it was easy to do.
Yeah.
And so good.
It's and
so
I liked good. Rewatching them too because I would like catch jokes a second time because sometimes it's so fast and there's so many jokes in a row that I would only be laughing at a joke and then another one would go by and I couldn't catch it.
Well,
kind
that's
of.
The thing about living with these seasons. And like, that's mm-hmm. why I'm saying the binge model is so strange with this because with the week to week and the way that, I mean, you talked about UPN Caffrey, but the rerun aspect of it for me was what, and living with these episodes, in addition to while waiting for the new seasons or the new episodes to run, you really did get to kind of just soak up these episodes to the point where like the smallest jokes were gonna, you know, come through. Like, I, you know, the reason why we're best friends here and why we're close friends is because we love our niche jokes. Like, I mean, Randall and I can quote every line in Tommy Boy. And I feel like the diehard Simpsons fans can do that with episodes. And I think that's kind of what makes that original run so special. And I can't speak for the newer fans out there, but I just don't think that they're doing the same sort of...
I'm a newer fan, and I mean, you can see it. Like, it's just...
The dip, you could see the dip.
And
yeah,
even watching the Treehouse of Horrors, because we've watched them the last... We haven't even watched all of them, because there's many. But we've watched them the last 2 years that they've been on streaming, and this year is my third year watching the old ones, and I've been catching jokes, like the episode where he kills Flanders... And like he's on his fog walk. And he's like, it's a wonderful night for a fog walk. Like just shit that I wasn't catching the first time that was funny this time because I knew when the jokes were that I laughed at the first time. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like looking for new ones to laugh at. So like it's been fun rewatching them now as like someone who's been watching them for 2 years. But I mean, coming into it, I didn't even know who shot Mr. Burns. Like I knew nothing about anything really. Like I still will ask like, who is this character? Mm-hmm. Because I'm still kind of learning, but if I like something, I go full-fledged
into
it.
I know
yes, like it's a problem.
Well, it's certainly been fun for us the last few weeks, which is why I really wanted to do this episode, is because we've really been kind of devouring the Treehouse of Horror brand. I mean, it's been such a, in an era, I mean, not to say, look, we're pros. We've seen pretty much every horror movie out there. So for me, it's been nice to just kind of, I don't know, put back on a Treehouse of Horror episode and let, you know, 4 of them run and not have to seek out a horror movie that I'm either going to rewatch or be disappointed in. So in that respect, it's been a lot of fun. And then we went to a pop-up bar this past week in Chicago.
And so I knew all of the references.
And you finally knew the references. So it's been a lot of fun. And so I'm glad that we're all here talking about this because this is, I was a diehard fan of The Simpsons growing up. I had the books. I really loved the, I mean, in my bathroom, you would have the guide that you would read over and over again that had all the cut downs of like who wrote the episodes, who directed, all the inside jokes. And I had that and I've read it like
and that's saying something because as someone who lives with him and like has been in a relationship with him for almost 5 years, he hates animation.
Hate animation.
Like I can't get, and I love it. So it's very bizarre that like this thing that's animated, he loves and I never really gave the time of day.
And I think the reason why for that is because with The Simpsons, it took the idea of animation and it was so secondary. Like you didn't think about it because a lot of the stuff were like more adult and realistic themes in larger than life situations. And I think that was kind of the original sell growing up. And I mean, I think they lean a lot on the pathos and stuff like that with a lot of these episodes because they don't have some of the jokes. But I think it's interesting that we're talking about The Simpsons just to keep going here because a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about this year, especially Randall and I, when we've been talking to the two Chapo guys, is the idea that like King is really a distinct icon in a way that very few are. Like we've talked about how Spielberg's very similar to him, but I'd kind of argue that The Simpsons are on the same tier. Like they're like that ubiquitous pop culture institution that A, everyone knows about, B, continues to keep churning out content, and C, stays relevant. I mean, obviously diminishing returns to The Simpsons, but look, we're here talking about a new episode. It's been on for over 30 years. They're on the 34th season now. Like, there are a lot of similarities here. Any thoughts on that? I mean, is it?
I think I've seen it, like, again, loving animation in the aughts. Like, you see, watching these old episodes, I'll go like, oh, Family Guy did that. Like, yeah. Everything is taking, like, South Park does it too. They take from The Simpsons because it's the OG animated series that was, like, huge. And I think as kids, when you're watching it, I'm sure, like, if I were you, because I was the same way when I would watch adult content, when you get the jokes, you feel, like, very adult as a kid.
Yeah, and I think that applies to King and Spielberg. You can see their DNA and things, you know, 20, 30, 40 years after their OG intent. Is it, Randall, what do you think about that? Because I know that we've been really kind of building on that narrative all year.
I mean, it's like, how do I put this? The quality be damned, it's so enmeshed in culture that it's kind of transcended quality at this point. It's like SNL. Like, SNL is somehow always part of the conversation, despite the fact that it is, like, painfully unfunny. And I mean, some would disagree, but it's like, and then The Simpsons, to me, I wouldn't call it painfully unfunny, but it is something that always manages to be part of the conversation, despite the fact that it's not nearly as popular as it used to be. It's everything is looked at it through, like Sammy just mentioned, South Park and Family Guy. You can't really talk about any of those shows without talking about The Simpsons, even though they have forged their own individual brands and many shows have pivoted off of them. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff that has a lot more South Park DNA than it does Simpsons DNA, but we still filter it through that lens because, like, yeah, like, The Simpsons is kind of the alpha and the omega in a lot of ways of animated content, modern animated content, and for better or worse. And I don't know, it's interesting. And I mean, even the kind of discussions and arguments around representation in art, like, The Simpsons was even a flashpoint of that because, you know, the Hari Kondaloba documentary came out, the whole Apu thing and Hank Azaria, like, all of that stuff was also, like, when all of those things needed to be discussed in culture, like, The Simpsons was at the center of that conversation. And I think that speaks in a lot of ways to just how cemented and it is into, the, like, the firmament of pop culture. So.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. But Jen, like, what do you think?
In a way that, this is what I think The Simpsons and King do so well, because they both really digest pop culture and it comes out in their art, but in a way that doesn't feel dated, you know? Like, I watched the Cape Fear episode, which is my personal favorite, but, and, like, I could date it because that was, like, kind of in the zeitgeist, but it still feels relevant now or still feels enjoyable. But you watch an episode of South Park and it is just so parodying the current discussion that if you don't know what that discussion is, you're lost. Like, I watched an old episode of SNL a while ago and it was, like, from the 90s, and they were talking about this movie and I had never heard of this movie, and so I didn't understand anything this sketch was talking about. And I feel like King and The Simpsons, like, they're so good at not letting the pop culture references date them, because it really, it feels like digesting pop culture and, like, putting it out in a new form rather than just kind of mirroring it back, you know?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%. Well, Caffrey, you've seen every South Park episode. How do you distinguish the two of them? Do you think that they've kind of reached that echelon as well now?
Yeah, I don't know, because, well, something I keep thinking about is, you know, we're even just in this conversation examining how The Simpsons has informed us and how it's become a part of our vocabulary, and it's so ubiquitous. I don't think that's the case for kids growing up now. I might be wrong. Maybe I'm just old and out of it and not in that scene, but I don't think that the youth today absorbs it in that kind of way. I almost feel like the audience is probably more people either our age or slightly younger who have stayed with it. I could be totally wrong about that. The thing I do think South Park has going for is I feel like, weirdly, because it is so up to the moment, it is more quotable for younger audiences, at least. Like, I remember when I was working at Groupon, and I started there when I was 26, which seems so young to me now, but I was on the older end of writers they hired there, because they hired a lot of people right out of college. I remember hearing people quoting South Park all the time. And then when I would talk to my cousin who was in high school, he was still quoting South Park all the time. And so even though I don't know if... Well, no, I guess when I just think about, like, buzz, what I hear, what I hear on the streets pop culture wise, right? I weirdly do hear about South Park more. I'm not saying that it means that the episodes are the same as they were back then, but I don't know, man. I mean, I've watched every episode of South Park. I reviewed it for, like, the better part of the last decade, and there's still cranking out some knockout episodes, especially this past season where they only had to worry about doing a few. And I don't know, I don't want to say The Simpsons isn't doing that because I'm not watching it, but I just feel like I'm hearing I hear about South Park still the way I used to hear about The Simpsons when I was younger, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think it's because The Simpsons, like, when I watched some of the older episodes that you showed me, it's like they would do stuff like the monorail song. It's like that's such a strange thing. Like, it's not popular or anything like that, and yet it was, everyone was singing that song, and it's like, who was talking about monorails at that point?
It's because it's like a ubiquitous thing, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, and that was one of the things I think that The Simpsons were so good at.
It was Conan.
Just being able to pull the older stuff where I think that, I mean, look, it's the elasticity of your own IP. It's like at some point you are just going to have to start tackling the most topical shit. I mean, because The Simpsons do it all the time. So it's not like, you know, I think with what makes that golden era so rich is the fact that it's kind of like when I talk about with the Twilight Zone writers, you know, or even just the writers that we love and respect, like King, they all grew up in an era where so many of these writers and so much of the pop culture was really like the bedrock of what was in that lane or what was in that, you know, what was going on in that that sort of genre. Like when you think about sci-fi, like the Twilight Zone really does kind of set the bar. Like they kind of set the bar, and that ultimately influences King in writing their stuff. And with the Simpsons, a lot of these comedy writers were coming in with stuff that they knew from their parents who were kind of knowing a lot of the stuff from the original tenets of television. So a lot of this stuff has already been ingrained into history. And so at that point, it's fair game. It's going to be here forever. It's like, you know, and even the construct of The Simpsons itself, it's basically a modern Flintstones, right? A more grounded Flintstones that's set in middle America. Like that itself is a timeless construct. And like, I think you were saying that, like, what is it? I guess the only thing that has aged bad is our own culture. Like you were saying that like Homer's wage or something like that is actually like, better back in the 90s than it is for a regular wage now.
And he's supposed to be like, you know, they're supposed to be lower middle class, you know, and it's just, it was showing us a piece of America that I don't think a lot of shows were showing at the time, I guess, like, because he was an alcoholic dad and like not great to his, I mean, he's like strangling Bart most episodes, but it still is played for laughs and you still like, I mean, I've cried in episodes. Like, the show has in heart.
Well, the range is a huge part of I think, again, the word I was just using is elasticity. And I think a lot of it does, it is showing us something that we're familiar with while also using familiar constructs. Because I bring up the Flintstones because even the show is very self-aware of just how indebted they are. Like, I think at one point, he literally does the
opening theme and he slides down the smokestack of the power plant and he goes, he's a Simpson, Homer Simpson. He's the greatest guy in history. And he hits a chestnut tree. Even Twilight Zone, the show between the Leonard Nimoy stuff and then the...
So much Twilight Zone,
Because they knew it stood the test of time. Like, they're making jokes for things that are already so, like you said, Mike, that are ingrained in pop culture.
Yeah.
So when you make jokes about things that are going on right now, you don't know if it's going to be like something that people are still talking about in 20 years.
It's the risk.
Yes. So, that's why when you go, I've watched Family Guy episodes from the early aughts and I'm like, who are these people that they're talking about?
Well, speaking about Simpsons, Family Guy, and South Park, I mean, South Park did the whole Simpsons did it thing. And it's funny, but it's also totally true. You think that's bad?
We wouldn't have Simpsons
Family
episode?
Guy or like South Park or any of these animated series if The Simpsons didn't do well. It's because every channel is just looking for their next Simpsons.
Well, it's weird now because we you think about that episode, Caffrey. That's like what, 15 years ago, if not more. It had to have been
Simpsons Day was. You're probably right.
It's like 20 years now at this point, which means that South Park's still on. So South Park has now added 20 years on it, and so is Family Guy. And so now
South
Family
Park's
Guy
is the second longest running animated show, longest running sitcom next to The Simpsons, right?
I imagine Family Guy is like right behind it.
I mean, was there an adult animated series before The Simpsons?
I mean, the Flintstones and like the Hanna-Barbera stuff
but it wasn't directed towards adults.
But adults still watched it. I mean, it was one of those things where everyone knew what it is. It's like the same thing with Peanuts. But they don't hit that level where I'm gonna watch this even without my kids. Like that's what was the difference with The Simpsons. Like The Simpsons were for kids because I mean, we can't go into the whole history of this because we'll go on forever and we'll become a Simpsons podcast. But when you look back at the history of The Simpsons, it started off with marketing Bart. Like, Bart was the big thing. Like, that's how I got drawn in, because I was like, oh, I like skateboarding, and I like
mischievous kid.
You like kids. Doing the Bartman.
And I want to do the Bartman. I want to get
I like doing the Urkel.
And hang out with bad boys. But then swiftly, I mean, that lasted like only a couple years. And by then it was already, I mean, they still were leaning on Bart here and there to keep that demo, but Homer had already become the star.
Yeah.
And at that point, the show really reached its ubiquity in being able to be for everyone. And that was the luck of the draw for them, because if it had just leaned on Bart, the show is not, we're not talking about the show right now.
Right.
That's a thing, but.
Cause that's for kids. Yeah. Like, do you think my dad was watching SpongeBob without me? You know, like there is no other show before that like a parent was turning on a cartoon or an animated show and going like, oh, I'm going to watch this without my kid. Yeah. I'd be red flag, to be honest with you.
but that's something that, and you mentioned the range of the show, and I think that's something that Family Guy and South Park struggle with, and they just can't do it. And I get that South Park has had some emotional episodes, and I know that Family Guy has. I guess I don't think it has.
No, but, I
don't
not think to that so. Caliber.
But yeah. there none of those shows have a moment like the episode with Homer's mom, like where you sit there and you go, oh, holy shit, the show could actually get. Like really heart-wrenching. Like there's scenes in this show in The Simpsons that get really dark, you know, like where his alcoholism brings him to, you know, Patty and Selma, and he has to borrow money. And I remember as a kid thinking like, this is really dark. Like this is something that I'm learning that has definitely happened. I've seen some of my relatives do that. And like, that was also the biggest flex that the show could do, is that it could make those episodes. And then right afterwards he could fall out flat, and then Barney would laugh, and then, you know, Mo would make a joke. Like, I mean, that's, and that was the uncanny ability of the show. And I think that, I mean,
that's similar to King, if you think about it.
It is very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the episode where Bart is trying to pass a test and he can't, like, he gets so frustrated and like cries. Like,
yeah.
I remember that feeling as a kid. Like, I started crying watching that episode, because it's frustrating to try to succeed and you still fail. And like, that was shit that was not being said on other on other animated series,
and no one expected it for cartoons. I think it's telling that like all of us pretty much said that we dropped off at 12, because I think that's when the show stopped doing that, and it's when the show, I mean, maybe it didn't stop doing that, it just stopped becoming reliably able to do that. And you know, there were you mentioned the fantastical Caffrey, and that's ultimately what happened with me too, because the last episode I watched was I think Simpsons for Safari. And I just remember being like, what is this? Like, what is this show? Like, why am the first off, there was no laughs. And the second off, there was nothing to mine out of it. It was just like, oh, here's Homer being stupid in another setting. Like, that's not enough for me. Like, this is another cartoon now at that point. Let's talk about Treehouse of Horror, though, real quick, because I think that's the big brand that's bringing us here. It's certainly the brand that's we're entertaining right now, because it's spooky season. When you hear Treehouse of Horror, what is the segment for you, or maybe the episode that comes to mind, Randall? What's your go to Treehouse?
I mean, it's The Shining. It's Shut Up Boy, You Wanna Get Sued. I mean, that's like, my friends and I quoted it ad nauseum when I was young. Although I also would say that the other one that comes to mind is the very first one, The Bad Dream House, because I was young enough when that came out that episode actually scared me. Like, I remember that very vividly. That, and I'll always remember when Homer becomes, like, digitized and
the Omega
world.
Man or something?
Omega no, that's not
Homer Cubed. Homer Cubed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and then...
Omega Man's another one.
I remember I didn't get it when I was a kid, but now it makes me laugh so hard, which is that when he gets spit out into our world, the first place he goes is an erotic cake shop. That right. to me is so funny. Like, as a kid, I couldn't piece those two disparate things together, but now I can. And those are the things I think that first come to mind.
Jen, what about you?
The Devil and Homer Simpson. That's my all-time favorite episode. And Terror at Five and How Feet, Bart Simpson's Dracula. It's just, that is my favorite episode of all of them. We actually did, on Psychoanalysis, we ranked all of the segments in one of our very first Comfort Horror episodes.
With Justin, right?
Justin, yeah, with Justin. It's still our highest, most listened to episode, which I think kind of speaks to the power of The Simpsons. But man, this is like, I talk about comfort horror all the time, and this is my number one comfort horror. Like, I watch it all the time, this episode in particular, but I like to just put them all on. I will say I have a big bone to pick with The Simpsons, because it should be Treehouse of Terror, not Treehouse of Horror, because of
the alliteration.
Yes. Although it's not technically alliteration, but it just drives me insane.
And then it's Tot, which is an abbreviation for Trick or Treat. So,
because
that's the name of the character in Trick or Treat, the little guy with the burlap sack on his head.
His name is Sam.
Sam.
Oh, it's Sam. Why do you think it's Sam. Tot?
I'm a fucking
idiot.
Okay.
Don't listen to anything.
I'm like, dumbass.
Yeah, no, you're right.
A lot
you're
of
right,
evil Todds around.
I just love characters with my name. So
that's true. That is true. Well, Trick or Treat to you, Caffrey. When you think of Treehouse of Horror, what is the segment that you think of?
I mean, all the
or even the episode.
All the ones that have been said, I mean, the Gremlin one, especially the Twilight Zone. But know what I think of is the Nightmare on Elm Street parody with Groundskeeper Willie.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this is something I love about Treehouse of I almost said Terror of Horror, which I'm sure we'll get into with the King parody we're about to discuss, is that they were really funny, but they were actually pretty scary also.
Yeah.
And when I think about when they think they've killed Willie and then he rises up as the bagpipe spider, that and it's this weird...
Yeah. It's really cool.
Background thing. It's actually pretty freaky. When I think about Homer at the end of the Raven poem, seeing the Bart Raven outside the window, like that's how you would end a horror movie. When they begin the, I don't know which one it is, but when they begin it with, you just see horse hooves on the ground, and that's a headless horseman with Krusty's severed head. Like, I mean, these are moments that actually scared me as a little kid, and I think the Nightmare on Elm Street parody more so than the rest of them, especially. I mean, it gets pretty grody. I mean, you see Milhouse like. Wait, no, that Milhouse gets killed in the one where they're eating the kids, the Soylent Green one, right? Either way.
I always remember that one because of, I think it was one of the first appearances of Uter, which is
yes.
Great. Oh, yeah.
I almost said Uter is my favorite character, Uter. But he's so insubstantial. I couldn't say
it. Careful, look at my flavors, bro.
It's great because when they cook them, everyone's dressed in like German war.
Yeah, it's so good.
I love to her, like, it's, I forget, which episode, is it the hockey episode where Homer's like, tell the, you know, it's not right to make fun of others for being different. And then he just sees Uter and sees like, that kid's got teeth. And he starts
whipping with the towel.
It's so fun. Oh,
The dialogue, the thing that was so good about this era is that like, it's like what Sammy's saying. It's like every line just fucking hits. And it's like, I think of like the part with the Nightmare on Evergreen Terrace episode that you're mentioning, Caffrey, when it's just like, when even Marge is like, well, that's interesting, but I don't know what that has to do with Groundskeeper Willie. And the kids are like, well, we didn't mention Groundskeeper Willie. It's just like,
lousy smarch weather.
Yeah, the smarch weather.
The smarch weather is so good.
It's such a good bit. Like, I can never, amazing. I love it.
Sammy, since you're coming in new here, and in terms of The Simpsons, though, I think you actually might be able to be a good judge for which ones that really stand out.
So I have two.
You have two.
Because there's a newer, not newer, but like newer to me, because we watched it. We went further this year. But my favorite one is Attack of the 50-Foot Eyesores. Isn't that the one with the...
We've named every segment in what I consider to be the best Treehouse of Horror, which is it's six. Treehouse of Horror 6, which is in 95. It's from season 7. It's the Attack of the 50-Foot Eyesores.
The song that she sings is so funny to me. Yes, like
that's the mascot one where the mascot's come alive.
And
that's the one that doesn't work in Tennessee, also. So.
Yes, and that's I had to reference because I get that song stuck in my head all the time. And I also think in an age where everyone gets outraged about shit online, it's one of the most timeless fucking prescient.
And just when Homer can't not look at him, and it's like because the big guy with the donut, it just cracked
me up.
But I also like I could see how this show probably got you guys into horror. Like I feel like without the show you wouldn't have like it's like entry level type of stuff. If I had watched this as a kid, I would have been like, oh, what is this a reference to? I want to watch what it's a reference to.
That's a big part of it. That and that's ultimately why I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of constant readers today are from
absolutely. I mean, there's so many that they do, and because like at the beginning you could tell some of them weren't just like it's like this new one just about it was like all a bunch of horror movies kind of intertwined, like even the Harry Potter one, which isn't great, it has different like jokes about other things, not just Harry Potter. So it was just, you know, like you got a smorgasbord of references as opposed to just one thing. But my new favorite one that we watched this year,
we're like cackling at this one,
is the dolphin one. I thought that I loved the dolphin one. I thought it was so fucking funny.
I've not seen a lot of the Trials of Horrors at this point. Is it like a spoof of Tusk, but with a dolphin instead of a walrus?
No, it's like it's all these dolphins that are taking over and they're going to kill the world. And
they come on land and they take over.
Yes, I'm looking for the episode because it's going to, like, Night of the Dolphin, it's 12.
So the last year, basically, I probably watched it other than, to be fair, this is the thing that's amazing about Treehouse of Horror. And I mean, look, we're literally talking about The Simpsons right now because of Treehouse of Horror. It is the one thing other than The Simpsons movie, which I actually liked a lot. I credit a lot of that to Albert Brooks. But and also some of the more standout episodes, like if they do, you know, like the 300th episode or the 400th mm-hmm. episode, or if there's some major guest star thing or whatever, maybe I'll come back and be like, all right, I'll go back. But it's always Treehouse of Horror. We were scanning through the Disney Plus stuff. There's maybe only like one or two that I don't remember, but I mostly always go back to it. It's like a tradition that I don't want to miss because it's like what you're saying, Jen. Like, there is something so comfortable about it. Like, I think of, like, when I think of Halloween, I think of Snick, especially as a kid. I think of Snick, and then also this. Like, this is like, you know, Simpsons aired on 8 p.m. So in this time of the year in Florida, it's right around the sun would set. And so I remember vividly Sunday nights just seeing The Simpsons playing in the windows as I'd run home from the park. And so it's very entrenched in that those fall days when the air is starting to get cool. You know, maybe there are pumpkins out on the stoop.
Because it's around like when school started for you guys. Like when we were watching, you could see that sometimes it was the first episode of the season.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Like, cool that you could start. It's like a start of a new season and it's a spooky episode. Like, I think that's fun to look forward to.
It's a good tradition. It's definitely a good tradition. It's one thing I love. And it's, you know, it's surprisingly not too entrenched in King, which is my segment right here I want to get into.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iyerinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detective shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
You know, obviously, we mentioned The Shining, which is from Treehouse of Horror 5, which was aired in 94. We actually screened that at our Creepshow back in September, and you could see that people still connect with that one, so it was big. But I'm going to go in through some other crossover stuff with King that kind of catch us up to where we are today. So, you know, in addition to The Shining, they also reference The Shining in Season 4 episode Brother from the Same Planet. In the beginning of the episode, Homer forgets to pick up Bart. And you see Milhouse and he's warning Trab, Poo, Kip.
Oh yeah,
Trab, and it's supposed to be like Red Rum. Mm-hmm. In the season 12 episode, The Blunder Years, there's references to Stand By Me.
Yeah, I'd never seen that episode because I had stopped watching by that point. So I watched it today. And
any good?
Well, it's fine. I mean, you can see the marked difference in quality. It wasn't really funny, but a couple laughs. But it is really indebted to Stand By Me. There's like some stuff that is really directly referencing it. It's like, you know, Lenny, Carl, Moe, and Homer are like the four kids, and then the bullies, like the Ace Merrill, it's the mobsters, it's like Fat Tony.
Oh,
and
funny.
Which is kind of funny. It's like younger versions of them. And then you know, Homer finds a dead body, but then it ties into this. It's not like directly referencing it, it's like very much sort of a vessel through which to do this whole like, oh, it's actually the dead body is actually Smither's dad. And it's like a weird story. I don't know. It wasn't a bad episode, but I thought the Stand By Me stuff was pretty cool. It was well done.
Strong.
Yeah, well, I mean, I thought it was a loving parody of it. You know,
it's interesting too because I believe that's season 12, and then the king himself appeared in an episode in season 12, which is called Insane Clown Poppy. And he's
I
at
watched
a book
that
fair.
As well, yeah,
yeah, we watched
it's
that
cute.
Today.
I mean, it's
the lamp fine. Monster. Yeah.
No, that's a Family Guy bit.
Oh, yeah, is it?
In this one, so it's there's a bunch of literary celebrities who voice, and they go to a book fair, and Amy Tan's in it, John Updike does his own voice in it. Who else? What's his name? Tom Clancy. And then
does Thomas Pynchon do one?
It's not this one, but he has another Simpsons. Yeah.
Okay.
But no, King does a bit where Marge goes up to him and she's like, "What's your next tale of the macabre going to be about?" And King is like, "Oh, I'm not writing horror right now. I'm writing an autobiography." Or he's like, "I'm writing a book about Benjamin Franklin." And she's like, "Oh, okay." And he's like, but then it turns into a horror where he's like, "Oh, he invented electricity and then he opened the gates to hell, you know?" Mm-hmm. And then
kind of like revival a little bit.
Yeah, it was, and King himself voiced it, and it's a charming little cameo. I thought it was pretty good.
It's the funny bit for that for me is remind me to when you go and write another horror book, and he actually gets at a post-it note, and he's like, call Marge regarding horror. Which I thought was pretty good. Also in that episode, which is interesting, Little King's Dominion, because Drew Barrymore is in that episode.
She voices and Sophie, Krusty's daughter.
Yeah, Krusty's daughter. And then Jay Moore voices Christopher Walken. Fat Tony is also in it, who's voiced by Joe Mantegna from Thinner. And today is the anniversary of Thinner. But then you mentioned Amy Tan, Randall. And Amy Tan, I believe, is a member of the Rock Bottom Remainders. Yeah.
With
Matt Groening. So
I did not know is he the only literary? I mean, I guess he technically is a literary guy because he did the what's that comic called with the roller skating rabbit that shows up in the Simpsons? Yeah, something from Hell. Yeah. So I guess
is that
he has
real a roller skating rabbit comic.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds cool.
You see it in the Simpsons. I think you maybe even see it in the opening credits in early seasons. But it's a comic strip that Matt Groening started off with. He seems like the outlier in that band, though. I know it's funny. It's like Amy Tan, Stephen King, and then him.
Who do you think has more net worth? Probably Matt Groening, right?
Oh,
right?
he's so rich, man.
Oh, I mean, from residuals, dude? Yeah.
I mean, he was friends with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yep.
I know, I was going to bring that up, but I'm glad you did.
We don't have to talk about it. I'm just saying.
I know, it is strange.
Well, I think
he is on the flight logs.
I think originally the Terror at 5 or 6 feet or whatever was actually in the Lolita Express and saw a little.
All right. Well, anyway, I wanted to make. I literally had a joke that I wrote down here and I wasn't going to do it. But anyway, I'm glad you brought up the Epstein Island.
Rumors are that he likes his feet rubbed.
We opened the box. Hey, man, look, I didn't. I'm not friends with Jeffrey Epstein. That's his fault.
Well, I'm putting a dome on this conversation, which is a nice little reference that to the movie, because the movie, the Simpsons movie, and Under the Dome. Some sort of coincidental ties.
Funny. When I read Under the Dome, I was like, oh, because I think I had just recently seen the Simpsons movie, and it was such a weird coincidence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although,
it's like
to be
Armageddon, Deep Impact kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's fair to say that King had the idea in the 70s, so it's not like the Simpsons did it. And I mean, they did do it, but so did King. So
Simpsons predicts.
So looking at this rundown, I'm kind of surprised there's not more, and I'm sure there is. I mean, I was just mostly leaning on Simpsons Wikipedia. But
I thought of one, and I don't think it's super official because I was surprised too. Because I read the Simpsons Wikipedia, I looked for Reddit threads and everything. There was one I didn't see mentioned, and maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but on the Bart Simpson's Dracula Treehouse of Horror, which obviously is mostly spoofing Bram Stoker's Dracula, the 1992 film. The way Bart is, or maybe it's not Bart, I can't remember. I can't remember which kids are the vampires first. No,
oh,
it is Bart.
They
come to the window to...
It's very Salem's Lot.
It feels like Salem's Lot, the TV show to me, the way it's kids floating outside the window and scratching. Now, I know Vampires at the Window was not invented by Salem's Lot, but there's something about the way the kids are floating and scratching that seemed like it was very indebted to the Salem's Lot miniseries at least, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I've got one other too. Dial Z for Zombie, one of the earliest ones. That's, it begins with Bart finding a book about it's like a Necronomicon, but he wants to raise their dead cat and they go to a pet cemetery.
That's
and
right.
It's not like they don't ever say pet cemetery or like really riff on the King aspect of it, because then it turns into more of a Night of the Living Dead riff. But the pet cemetery aspect is there.
Yeah, I was trying to think of other ones. I mean, I
looked it up, Caffrey. It is Bart. He goes up to the window and he said, "Come on, Lisa. It's so cool. You get to stay up all night drinking blood."
Well, hey, and even think about the Glick brothers, right? Like, it's a sibling thing. And I think definitely safe to say that Stephen King popularized the pet cemetery idea. And because it's because it essentially is coming from that plot point of Pet Cemetery.
Yeah, it's trying to raise a dead animal and it being like, a bad thing.
I could have sworn there was like a Needful Things reference in The Simpsons, but I can't find it.
I thought there was a Dead Zone one, but then weirdly enough, South Park directly spoofs the Dead Zone.
Well, there's the Ned Zone, which is a later instance.
Yeah, there's some episodes that have like names that riff on King properties, but I don't think they directly reference King in the episode.
Well,
I mean, how can you not? Like, the similarities to, like, King writes a lot about, like, you know, poor families that are in kind of rural areas. So it's like rural, that's such
rural.
Yeah. But so you can't, like, it's hard not to make those connections, even if, like, they're not supposed to be, like, you can draw to them yourself.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. That's a good seg for me, because I was going to say, like, what is it, even if they aren't explicit references to King, like, what is it about Springfield that maybe does feel Kingian by design? Like, I mean, it seems a little bit bigger of a town than, say, Castle Rock. So I don't know if I'd say, I mean, I don't know if there's any power plants, nuclear power plants in any of King's towns.
I think just by virtue of it being primarily a blue-collar town, I mean, mm-hmm. we don't mm-hmm. get a lot of those, honestly, in a lot of, like, television. And I think just focusing on lower middle class people in a working class town, I mean, you know, and Springfield's not like, you know, a dust bowl or anything, but it is primarily staffed with blue collar people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the big joke, I guess, is that we don't really ever know where it is. Although I've always thought it's just Springfield, Illinois. But
didn't he say it was Oregon, I think, a couple of years ago?
I think at one point. Yeah, they make that joke where in the movie where Flanders brings Bart to like all the different points of you could literally see every terrain known to man like from a mountain. Anything else?
Yeah, it's like it's a small town. Like, it's small enough that you interact with people that you don't necessarily like. Like, I think about like Wilma and Nettie are gonna run into each other in Castle Rock the way, like, I don't know, Flanders and Homer live next to each other, but like you're interacting with people, so there's conflict. Whereas like I'm in a driving city, so I just don't see people I don't like, you know? So.
It's also just the ensemble nature of it, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. And that we're there long enough to really get to know the characters.
Which I think was a benefit for The Simpsons for a long time, but I don't know, man. I think they got a couple good one-off characters and they won't let go of them. You know what I mean?
I agree. 100%.
And like that applies to this It episode, but we can talk about that in a second.
Well, let's talk about it now. I think that's okay. A good seg, because we can kind of wield in a little bit more of our Kingian echoes that we see in Springfield. But I mean, just first off the bat, I mean, what do we think about this? I mean, 5 years later, they're capitalizing on It. Seems a little late. I guess at this point, maybe they are waiting to see if it was going to, you know, be entrenched in pop culture. I think being the highest grossing horror film of all time says enough of it as it is. But I don't know. I guess for me, I'll be quite honest. Like I kind of just felt like meh about this. It just felt like another Simpsons Treehouse of Horror where I was entertained for 30 minutes or 20 minutes. But ultimately, it just felt like it was, I don't know, kind of wearing a Simpsons skin over the It touchstones. Mm. That's kind of where I felt about it in a way.
Yeah. I have similar thoughts, but I don't know. I don't want to rain shit on it before.
No.
Caffrey can weigh in, because I know Caff liked it. So Caff, yeah,
I did.
Liked it.
Well, all right, and I should say it's been a minute. So I mean, like I said, I was checking in with The Simpsons kind of over the years, but it's been a while since I've watched a recent Simpsons episode. So I don't know if it was maybe just me comparing it to something like the movie. I've seen episodes since the movie, but I don't remember them very well. And so maybe I was just comparing it favorably to that, but I don't know. There was something about the sense of humor that just felt a little sneakier to me than The Simpsons has in the recent times I've seen it. I think even right off the bat that they're just kind of digging into the mainness of Stephen King. Like I
like that part. Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I was like, okay, it was almost like they've done their homework kind of thing. And because once again, it goes back to what I said before. Like, I wasn't like, you know, falling over gut busting laughing or anything like I am at like the Homer Palooza episode or the Fat Homer episode or something like that, but I watched those episodes, I like cackle. It wasn't like that for me, but it
what
did
computers
kind of, yeah.
I literally have to bite my tongue to not spit out like 15 quotes from those episodes.
I know.
Which
Homer Palooza is my favorite episode of all time.
I'll watch myself with a rag on a stick. I could go on.
Tell him pick up his puppy.
And he'd look, we'll be happy to treat you to a garbage bag full. But it does go back to that. I think it scratches that treehouse horror itch for me because I actually thought there were moments that were pretty creepy of it also. Like, it kind of functioned as both a fun horror cartoon for me and something that was very funny. I like, too, that they were taking the purity of it, like the poem, and then just making it so shallow and cheap. Because that felt very Simpsons to me. Like, oh, we're going to take everything meaningful about it and just kind of shit on it a little bit. So it largely really worked for me. But like you said, because it sounds like you guys have watched, even though you maybe haven't watched regular episodes, you've watched the Treehouses of Horror every year. And I haven't. I mean, I haven't seen a Treehouse of Horror, gosh, and probably... no exaggeration, like 20 years at this point.
Oh, wow.
So maybe that might be it for me too. Like that, I just was like, oh, cool, Treehouse of Horror again. Haha. Yeah. So I think that's the best way I can articulate all of it. And I thought I was having fun. I liked that we see a little Barney get like bloodily killed in the beginning. I just thought that was a cool move to do. I will say I was confused because I thought young comic book guy was Barney for like the longest time, and I was like, wait a minute, didn't he?
Well, I didn't know who it was.
Yeah, you had the same issue with that guy, too. Yeah.
Well, no, I didn't know who Barney was, and because they were little, so I didn't understand. Like, I don't know that character that well, I guess. Like, he's never stands out to me, so it's like, I don't know who this is. Well,
and he wasn't really acting. This version of Barney wasn't really acting like Barney. He was just kind of like a kid who looked like Barney, which maybe goes to what you guys are saying, like just putting this kind of skin on one thing. But I thought it was a really... I thought it was a funny twist that the bullies were like Superintendent Chalmers and the principal and the music teacher.
I loved that.
I don't know. It weirdly like subverted everything that I love about both The Simpsons and it. And so I just thought it was like a very charming... fun exercise of genre storytelling. That's the best defense I can give of it. But go ahead, shit away, boys.
Well, Jen, what did you think?
I thought it was fine. Like, there were a lot of the little flourishes that I liked. Like, I loved the Sousa t-shirt. That was like a joke for like 10 people, and I'm one of those people, you know. And I loved like the pie in the face kill and the intestines making balloon animals. I think. Ultimately, it just overstayed its welcome, which I think when you see like most of the Treehouse of Terror, like those segments are like 7-ish minutes and they can be as weird as they want and you never get tired of it. And I think like I just kind of got bored by the end. It was Lenny Erasure. Like, why are we following comic guy when Lenny is not one of the people?
I agree.
That's
a
good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and this is where I can get at. The ensemble's gotten too big, and not only has it gotten too... Like, comic book guy is not a character. He is a guy who shows up in one scene, makes fun of the... He was the vessel for making fun of the fans, and which was great. Like, that's what Simpsons was so good at, was they always had a character that represented a certain thing they wanted to satirize or parody or make fun of. And they operate... You know, if they want to make fun of the education system, they had Skinner or Miss Krabappel. If they wanted to make fun of... capitalism, corporate greed, they had Mr. Burns. Like, all these people fit different archetypes that they could build episodes around, but some people you can't build an episode around, really, and then that's reflected in the fact that he doesn't even have a name. He is comic book guy. And that joke is not funny to me, the idea that he is just named comic book guy. And that's I think, speaks to where I struggled with, and I didn't think it was awful. I thought it was, you know, it was, like, I agree with you, Mike.
Yeah, I didn't think it was awful. It was just,
like, it was entertaining. And I was thinking a lot about, like, I don't think, like, the writing was bad necessarily. And when I watched some of these, and I think a lot of the Simpsons isn't bad, actually, is because so many people said later Simpsons sucks, right? Like, that was the vibe. And I feel like in some ways that's because people feel betrayed by the show they loved when they were young. It's not the same as it used to be, blah, blah, blah. Things evolve. That's what happens when shows are on for 30 years or whatever. But so then people sort of did the thing that culture does, which is it overreacts and it says, no, actually, Simpsons is great. And the thing is, I don't think Simpsons is bad. I think, like, because it has a lot of good writers that work on it. But I just think that humor has changed so much. And humor is so self-referential now. And I hate that. And it's really annoying. And it's basically, and this is me being, I mean, I'm readily able to admit that I am just old man yells at cloud right now. Cause I am like, if this is what people find funny, and this is like when I never feel more disconnected from culture than when people are losing their minds over an SNL sketch and I watch it and I'm, and like, it is offensive how bad SNL is to me.
But and then, more often than not, it's just literally taking whatever they're making fun of and just doing
well,
it.
You say, yeah, no, well, no. Then, like, humor, and it's like, I'm 10 years younger than you, and I feel the same way. Like, you mentioned SNL, and Simpsons is it's the same, where it's like, you've started with these writers, and it's gone through eras, so not all the writers are going to be great. They're not going to be like Conan's at the beginning, you know? Yeah, and so. Yeah. Yeah. It's gone through different eras, and you can feel the change.
Well, you can yeah, see, you can feel the bars set, and then how that you just can't reach some of those.
Well, there's
bars
that
again.
Too. I mean, there's just the aspect that it'll never be as good as it was because that was such a unique assemblage of talent at that time that had all converged yeah. on this one show, and so it's more so like humor has like become this snake that eats its own tail, in that we pretty much just. Present things that are that people perceive to be true, and that it goes back to those like epic movie, scary movie kind of deal where it's like
yes,
it's
exactly.
just reference, like you just reference something, and that's yeah. the joke. And even on now, The Simpsons, like where there were plenty of good, you know, well constructed jokes in this episode. I wouldn't say any of them made me laugh, but I could recognize okay, that at least joke has some meat to it. But Mike, you said that this was like just putting the skin. Of it over this or Simpsons over the over it, and I agree, and I actually was gonna bring up the Barney thing too. I'm like, this isn't Barney, right? Like this is
right.
This is like if a little kid talked like Barney, and
exactly.
and the voice made me laugh because it just sounds like a little kid imitating like an angry old woman, and it's such a bad voice like that it makes me laugh. But and I thought some of the ingenuity of like the way the clown was represented, like Crusto was represented, was really cool. Like I agree with you, Jen. You mentioned like the clown sort of style kills, right? Like, which is not something yeah. that Pennywise does in the book. And I thought it was a fun thing to integrate into The Simpsons. It's like, yeah, do some clown kills. Like, I don't need fidelity from this. The problem was right. that they were trying to tell the whole story, which they didn't need yeah. to do. I was watching The Shining.
You didn't need to do that at all. Yeah.
I was watching The Shining, which is like 7 minutes long. And yeah, it's The Shining, but they hit like a couple beats. And then everything in between is they still feel recognizably like the characters. Like yeah. what's so great about The Shining is like, yeah, Jack's an alcoholic. And one of the reasons he goes crazy is because he can't drink. But then with Homer, it's great because it naturally dovetails with him just loving beer, but then no TV. You add that aspect and it's like, yes, this is Homer. Like this feels very true mm-hmm. to Homer.
Yeah.
Everyone in this, right. in this episode didn't really feel like they're actual characters. They felt like mm-hmm. they were playing these, archetypes from it, and they started self-referencing the archetypes, right? They're like, oh no, I'm like the dirty crusty kid, and I'm this one, mm-hmm. and I'm this one, and they like say that, and then they're doing these flashbacks, and they're like, oh no, Mo's like, oh no, we don't need a flashback for that one. Like it's all self-aware meta jokes, which is very much where culture is, because everything is transparent now, so we kind of have to make fun of the artifice, and that to me is just desperately deeply unfunny. Like it's not yeah. funny to me, and so it makes me mad, because I'm like, there are inspired bits in it. Like them doing the main accents was very, very funny. That was probably the hardest yeah. I laughed at it. And then, and I was reading an interview with the showrunner and he was talking about, oh, we didn't just want to do a bunch of references and stuff like that. But then, so they basically took like 2 minutes and crammed every reference into that, where there's like a mattress store called Dr. Sleep.
Yes.
And
it's oh,
like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a Misery banner. There's a store called Needful Crap. And I'm like, there's no real jokes here. You know what I mean?
It's low hanging fruit. Like you said earlier, like what I liked about the original ones is that it's the core story, but they do things differently with it. They make it their own.
Yeah.
This one felt like here's it again, you know, with like subtle changes that didn't make sense. Like, I would have understood if Comic Book Man was Marge's husband, like, but right. not one of the losers. Like, yeah. why wouldn't it have been Flanders or even Milhouse's dad?
Yeah, I mean, it really. I
thought they were
going to
Van Houten would have been great.
That's
who a loser.
Kirk Van Houten's my favorite right. character. Can I borrow?
Can
a
I buy you a feeling?
That's so inspiring.
Didn't you sing that? Didn't you sing that at your wedding?
Yeah, I sang at my wedding for my wife.
No.
I love that episode because when you rewatch it as an adult, you're like, oh, he's horrible. Like Kirk is like,
yeah,
there's
yeah,
no,
he's
there's
an
a kid,
asshole.
You're like, oh, I feel bad for him. But and, right. It's funny though, because I actually had, I don't know. I feel like I felt like it was kind of changing the source material just enough, because I thought the route they were going to go, which would have been really dark, was a comic book guy was going to become like the Tom Brogan character. And
yeah.
Wait, is his last name Brogan in it? Did I say that
Brogan,
right?
I think. R-O-G-A-N, I think.
So we have Tom Rogan, Heck Drogan, the Dogan.
We all know he does Dorgan. This. It's,
I, no, it's every week there's a different one. Like
that toolbox of his, you know, he's got he's got a couple of wrenches that are the same.
Yeah, and they're all from the company Ogan. And but I thought they were going to go in that direction. Like, oh, he's going to become the villain or become kind of like a Tom Henry Bowers character. And I kind of like that he did. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but like, it felt very quietly surprising to me the whole time. I mean, I don't know.
Because we watched it twice. The first time I watched it last night, I was a little drunk. I got home drunk and we put it on and I didn't like it. And then I watched it again today and things kind of grew on me. But the one thing I hated was that they didn't do the stuff with the names that they usually do with like the when the creators come in with like the produce by
James Hell Brooks. I completely agree. I was waiting for that at the end.
Matt Groening.
Yeah, and it just said his name really and I was surprised. Like, this is lame. Like, I'm so used to that. And it's like, that's such a creative thing that I looked forward to every time. Because this is coming from someone who's only watched the best of the best. Like, I literally have watched up to season 13 of the Treehouse of Horrors. So I have watched ones that are amazing, like could be in a comedy book of some of the best writing ever. And then I watch this one and it's like, okay, like this is, where's the joke here? Like, yeah. It's not, it's really like, funny, you know, like.
It's like I've played like all the greatest hits of the Beatles. And then you go to like, I don't know, like a 1986 album from like Paul McCartney or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
And, you're just like, and like oh, okay.
The soundtrack
see,
to, wings give my, up. To give my regards
I
mean, to Broad
if,
Street.
If I were a fan like you guys and you start with every episode, every minute of the 22 minutes is great. It's well written. It's well thought out. And then you slowly get to where it's every couple minutes is fine. You know, there's like stuff in between. And then it's like there are whole seasons where maybe you get like three episodes that are funny. So I get it. You can see it now. I see it now. This was the first time I was like, oh, wow, it did drop in quality. Because there was some like peripheral humor, because that's some of my favorite stuff.
That's what they were used to be great at, the visual gags.
And it was
like,
so
Suicide
like,
Notes, formerly Good Vibrations. Like, that's such a fucking great joke. And like,
and it was just low hanging fruit in this one. Like, for me, I was like, oh, okay, good one. Like, it just was like, all right. Like, the lobster thing I did like, but it's like also like everyone knows that about Maine. Like, that's not some niche joke, really.
Well, it's like I always think of it, the Flieger and I always do this joke, but it's like when Lionel Hutz appears in court and he's like, I think we're going to be okay. I watched Matlock last night. And then
the
you think that's
off.
Already like, that's already the joke. But then they dig deeper and you're like, oh, the sound was off and I didn't really get to
hear. I think I got the gist.
But I think I got the gist or whatever. And like, it's like that ultimate hit of like the boom, boom, boom. Like they used to be so good at that. And like, and I think that's ultimately the vacuous feeling I get with these episodes is that I just don't feel that. Like, I'm in this world and it's almost like going home for the holidays in college and expecting like your high school friends and everyone to still be there and the things to happen. And that's not the case. Like, maybe you see one friend and that's it. And you're hanging out in the place that you might have hung out with before, but it's not the same. And like, that's kind of how I feel like going back to The Simpsons, like, oh yeah, it's Springfield. It's certainly the characters I know. No one's really doing the things they used to do anymore.
Like, am I wrong?
That's not Wayne's basement.
Yeah, that's not Wayne's basement.
Am I wrong in Party On, Wayne? Party
On. Party On, Garth.
Wayne's World! am I wrong in that? And I didn't watch it. Was there a regular Treehouse of Horror this year also that was the anthology?
It's airing this
I think
weekend.
That's next. Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, I
the
didn't
Babadook.
Know that.
Oh, really?
And I'll say this. I'll say this. Like, I saw a clip from the new one, and it's riffing on Death. What is it? Death Book or whatever.
Death Note.
Death Note, the anime. And they
style
it.
That was a joke today.
No,
I saw it on Twitter. That's real. Oh, that's. Awesome.
I think it's real. I mean, but it's styled like an anime, and I think that's really cool. Like, I love Treehouse of Horror being this vessel for The Simpsons because they have so much money, I'm sure, to like really experiment with form and storytelling. That's a cool, that's great, and I support that. Like,
it's a great sandbox.
I just want to emphasize, like, I don't want to be a hater on this. It's just like, and I think maybe my frustration comes from the fact that I am Principal Skinner saying, am I out of touch?
No, they're not wrong.
No, the kids are wrong. And it's like, I feel that way sometimes, and that's where I feel this disconnect from culture, because I'm like, am I just old and I don't get it anymore? Or and the thing is, that's not true either, because it's just the humor has changed, and I don't want to be the old guy who screams and says, it's not funny, you idiots. But it's just, for me personally, I think I feel an amount of frustration because I'm like, I wish I was laughing when I watch this, but it just does not appeal to me. And that's probably my own fault because the only thing I laugh at anymore are like people posting about diarrhea on Twitter. So
that's not all it. We laugh about some really fun uncouth shit sometimes too, of which we won't bring up here.
No.
But Jen, you mentioned something about the time and the runtime and about how this is kind of the one-off. And I think that's important to discuss here because, you know, obviously this is an experiment for them. You mentioned, Randall, the Treehouse of Horror being a bed for a foundation to have some experimentation. This was an experiment to be a one-off. Ultimately, I think I agree with you, Jen, in that I do think that the segmented, the bite size, the Halloween treat candy that we would have with the Simpsons.
Fun-size Snickers. Like
the fun-size Snickers, the fun-size Simpsons. I think that works really well, and I want to pose this question, and maybe this might be a good way to round it out a little bit. What if this was just, maybe we'll do it, but we'll also do all King, and we can kind of do a bunch of King stories that we could kind of parody or all throughout for three different segments. I kind of wonder if that works out better or if that maybe seems a little too redundant. I don't know, but.
No, I think that would have been way better. It should say something that you can get more story out of a 7-minute segment than we got in a 20-minute like episode.
Yeah.
I have felt more and I've had things stick with me more from like those quick 7 minutes,
yeah.
You know, because they get maybe some of them even like 5 because
yeah.
It's a 22-minute episode. And they always have 3 usually,
yeah.
Which is a lot of story to tell in that amount of time. And I feel like I got more feeling, more storytelling from the smaller segments than I got from this whole 22-minute thing.
Yeah, because I think that, well, I'll wait for a second on that. But what do you think, Jen? I mean, do you wish you got like kind of 3 bite-sized, king-sized
Yeah, I think that would be fun. Now, I know Family Guy did an episode like that, I think,
oh,
a couple
okay.
of years ago. And they did Shawshank Redemption, Misery, and...
I think Stand By Me, actually.
Stand By Me, yeah.
We pulled
a
couple of those clips for the Creep Show, but
yeah.
Yeah, okay, then I guess Family Guy did it.
Yeah.
As they would say.
I think I would probably enjoy that more than what we got, you know, or like, I don't know, maybe they tell this one in this year's, they tell like the kids' version in this year's, and then they do another chapter later or something. I don't know. Because like, it with like what you're saying, Sammy, is like, with the 3 one-offs, when they're so bonkers, you never get bored. And
yeah.
So like, because those little flourishes, those little lines about like the sound was off, but I got the drift, that's the icing on the cake. But there has to be cake there. And I feel like
yeah.
by the end of this one, I was just so bored with the cake that I wasn't even paying attention anymore. I had to go back and look at what Carl's dream was because I'd just forgotten, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. I think by being this... Not feature length, because we've certainly seen a feature length movie.
Feature
Simpsons.
Length for Simpsons, yeah.
The 20-minute length.
I've never seen it.
You know, the full episode. It's a fun movie. I actually really like it. But I do think that they had to lean on the heart. And like one of the problems I have with this is that, and you brought up an article that you can kind of digress
God,
on, Randall.
That thing was
nuts. Is that it's just it like I don't need that much sort of heart and thought into like especially a Treehouse of Horror episode. It makes sense in The Simpsons. It makes sense in The Simpsons, even though. This is a 34-year-long fucking show in which no one ages. Although I hear Homer loses one more hair this season, or did in the past. And
I think
you guys are
the same age as him now.
We are probably at this point, but we no one ages. They've changed the things, but when you do the narrative and you go for the heart, it makes more sense in the regular episodes. I don't want that in the Treehouse of Horror.
Nope.
Yeah, the whole fun of it was like. In Treehouse of Horror, anything goes. Like, you can kill
yes.
anybody in this world.
Right.
And that's
like,
a really
Maggie
fun
Maggie is
part.
An alien and her leg comes off.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't want
feelings.
And yet
they tried
feelings,
to do
yeah.
heart in this, and it didn't work for me either.
For which one?
For this new one. Like, they tried to do the heart of it,
yes.
like, and it didn't work for me at all.
Well, it's like, why are we doing this? These aren't even the real characters. So it's like,
well,
and I
I'll
know,
say,
I don't know.
I'll say,
go for this because...
Screen Rant strikes again. So there's this
oh,
insane stream.
I couldn't believe this.
Screen
oh
Rant
God.
Article. I'm not going to... It's 8,000 words like all their articles. So it's like, I'm not going to read the whole thing, obviously, but... But
I mean, it's SEO driven, right?
That's, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
sure.
It's The Simpsons fixed an It movie problem by changing Stephen King's story is the headline. And I know I'm just giving them what they want by reading
uh-huh.
this shit, but it's like, but it's just, they write this shit to make everyone kill themselves. But it's like, so basically they're saying that this is it improves upon King's book. Because it actually adds stakes to the romance. Because by having, you know, by having the comic book guy steal Homer's poem, then it creates a stronger love triangle than with between Bill, Ben, and Beverly, because obviously that is the real thrust of it and what everyone cares about.
That's the last thing I think about when I think
exactly. Yeah, so well, like,
in the novel
thing.
Version of it and its movie adaptations, there were some moving scenes and at least one devastating death. However, the central trio of Bill, Ben, and Beverly all emerged from the story unscathed. As the main characters, it was clear that they were never going to die, and they didn't. In contrast, the Simpsons spoof of Stephen King's It injected real stakes into their love triangle by killing off comic book guy. It was strange to say, but the Simpsons parody of Pennywise ended up taking a bigger risk than its characters than the Stephen King book.
I mean, this is ridiculous.
I am going to shoot myself in the head.
That is baffling to me, that that is someone's take and someone got paid to write
it. Well, I mean, yeah.
Are they paid? I don't know. Look, we've all freelanced. I've written stories maybe I'm not proud of, but I'm saying, like, I always thought screenwriting's thing is just to be SEO driven and clickbaity. And look, I have to write a lot of SEO copy for my job. I'm not knocking.
Well, I hope
SEO
you're not
copy.
Pitching ScreenRant anytime soon, because they're going to hear this and be like, fuck these guys.
But there's a way, and the common sense around SEO nowadays is actually to not write like that. It's actually just to make your copy unique and authoritative and not worry about all these, like, bullshit headers they
100%.
Have and everything.
Yeah.
So I always thought that's what their purpose was, or their sort of driving force. Is it contrarianism? Like, are they writing stuff just to provoke?
I think they just throw everything at the wall possible. And anyways, we don't have to get into all that. I just thought that this piece was very nuts. And I mean, they just, but it's like, I'm trying to find, it's so long. It's hard
to find.
Well,
I'm glad you brought it.
It felt like dystopian reading it. It was weird. It was like
Hold on.
The only reason why I wanted to bring it up is because I think it illuminates the idea that, like, the fact that there's even an ability to make a take like this kind of elucidates, at least for me, why I had a problem with this is that, like, we had too much, there's too much girth or too much length here for us to have these sort of conversations. I don't need these sort of I don't know, not takes, but conversations about a Treehouse of Horror, because for me it's like, I don't care about the drama, I don't care about the tension, like, that's not the point of Treehouse of
make
Horror.
Me laugh.
Exactly.
I know. I want, or like, clown murder. You know.
Yeah. Or murder. It's like, but here's the section you pulled, Mike, that made us all laugh. The sight of comic book guy sacrificing his life so that he can make amends for keeping Homer and Marge apart was a rare case of the show using its large supporting cast for effective drama and a weirdly touching moment in an otherwise silly, over the top episode. It's just kind of like, this is partly, I think, why I like, this is where I struggle with a lot of modern art, because there is this effort to, like, always create that sort of three-act structure and that kind of emotional growth for characters, when sometimes you don't need that. And it's like,
you don't need it. No.
Yeah, like, you look at all these, like, early Treehouse of Horrors, and a lot of them just end with, like, because they're like, oh, we're out of 7 minutes. All right, somebody gets their head cut off, and then we're done. And that didn't...
Some of them are dour endings, too.
Yeah, like, very dour.
They leave
very
you
dour.
With, like, oh, fuck, like... That's terrible.
The fall. Well, that's
Homer
the point.
Eating himself to death.
The gallows humor is what should be fueling these segments. And like, it'd be like if someone in the 90s had written an article in a zine or in Spin magazine, how, like, you know, it's kind of sad how Groundskeeper Willie failed 3 times to save Bart in all those episodes, you know, in the Treehouse, the latest Treehouse of Horror episode.
Or if someone about that Family Guy episode where they did Shawshank was like, you know, like, it was kind of a little more heartfelt than the original movie.
Yeah,
like,
that's
could
exactly
you imagine?
It, though.
Obviously, this person hasn't read the book, because this new one even had more fucking heart than, like, the miniseries and the book. They were trying so hard to add, like, moments that, you know, pulled at your heartstrings, and to say that this Simpsons episode had more of that is crazy to
me.
Yeah,
it's a little
show is never, usually doesn't do that is also a little bit silly. I mean, maybe they don't do it as much as they used to, but I mean, the show is kind of known, like,
no,
you
I think
said,
they
for
do
the,
it all the time now.
They
I mean,
do
I think
now.
That's kind of like how
it's an
it
easy
is
crutch.
Now.
Yeah.
It's
an easy crutch.
It's funny because even just thinking about the Bart Simpson's Dracula episode, that literally ends with, like, the solving of the mystery is, oh no, the whole family's been vampires the whole time, like, everyone in town's a vampire,
and they sing,
and they do the Charlie Brown Christmas thing at the end.
So
it's
good,
so funny. I love it.
Like, even the dolphin one that I had brought up, it ends with the dolphins basically banning them to the sea, and they all have to just live in the sea, and Krusty is just floating there dead, and they're all sitting on the couch just watching TV so the dolphins can go on land. And it's like, they don't end happy.
No,
like, ever.
No. And they end the whole point of it is to be tongue-in-cheek, to have gallows humor, and to be as irreverent as possible. And, like, that's where I'm like, when you shared that article, I was just like, oh my God, that is just such a perfect microcosm for where we are right now.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's just, anyway, we don't have to digress too much.
Well,
on
I'll
it.
Just say one last thing about it, which ties back to our initial criticism of it, which is that it's not even as if this speaks to the larger characters within the world of the show, because they essentially reskinned everyone. So there's elements of Homer and Marge that are recognizable from the show, but by and large, they're just acting like the characters from it. So this is just this manufactured drama that really doesn't speak anything to the, like, the reason Homer's mom episode is, like, you know, the one where Homer's mom shows up voiced by, who voices her? Somebody famous. Susan Sarandon? Anyways, it's like that episode is considered one of the
Susan Sarandon. Well, let me check this. I got to look this up now.
Pam Anderson, right?
Pam Anderson.
What a babe. But it's like that episode is considered one of the most moving episodes. And I think it has to do in a lot of ways with all the history we know about Homer's upbringing up until that point. And it was Glenn Close. That makes sense. It's like, but it actually, like, speaks to, like, this character as we know him and this family as we know it. And here they're just trying to create this sort of manufactured drama that is rooted in Stephen King's story, but also twisted. And so it just feels like this, you know, very writerly thing where it's like, they're using these. It's like, remember how I complained about Castle Rock season 2? Because I'm like, you give me Ace Merrill, you kill him in the first episode, and then you make him some faceless monster who isn't Ace Merrill, but he's just in the body. That's me, like, strips it of the whole meaning, because I watch this because I'm like, oh, there's history with this character, and I want to see how that spreads here, but then none of that matters. And that's my criticism of this.
Oh, totally. I mean, well, that's what I was saying earlier. It's just like, I get the heart when it's in regular episodes because it matters. In this case, it shouldn't. It's a one-off. Why do I need to care about the arc of these characters at all? Like, and that's the whole conceit.
Bart and Lisa, like, make them the children, you know what I mean? Like, like, make it, use the actual children you have on the show instead of trying to reskin Homer and Marge and all them to be the Losers Club. Do one with, like, Bart and Lisa and Milhouse and Nelson and Martin and this
Ralphie
huge fucking, yeah, Ralph and this
Georgie,
huge, like,
you know,
yeah,
it, like, doesn't need to be, like, an exact replica. Like, again, like I said, I like how they take it and make it their own.
Yeah, piecemeal.
And what they did in this one, the stuff that they made their own just didn't work for me.
I mean, even down to, like, I mean, I guess the score, they did the score thing in The Shining, but, like, and they have touchstones. Like, touchstones is the key word.
Yeah.
Like, hit the touchstones. You don't need to do literal adaptations. And I think that's kind of where I'm at with a lot of, it's like what you were saying, Randall, earlier, which is, like, self-referential stuff. It's just like, you know, you're not even making jokes so much as, like, just giving it to us so that we're all Leonardo DiCaprio for once in a while. We're all Rick Dalton. We're all pointing at it and being like, hey, look at that, look at that.
They just recreated shots, like Georgie getting pulled into the sewer. It's just the exact shot from the movie, and there's no joke to it. Like, whereas, like, you think about the Shining episode, and it's like, she finds his typewriter, right? And it's supposed to be, oh, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, whatever. But then it says feeling fine on the typewriter. But then the lightning strikes and it's written all over the walls. Like, you know,
it's
no
such
TV
a good
writer.
Joke. God, that's such a good joke.
And that's
whereas in this one, they tried to make the fact that Marge is, like, afraid of seltzer water or something. And I was like, what is this joke? I don't understand the reference. Like, what am I supposed to laugh at?
Yeah, it was very, I mean, there were some jokes that land. Like, I thought whenever they make fun of Fox, I think it's great. Like, with the crusty poster with Fox, I think it's funny. That felt a little old school. And then, the problematic
tweets inception.
Yeah, I mean, some of it were all right. I mean, for us, I think we all, like, enjoyed the Tony Knockers bit at the end. But, like,
yeah, that was fun.
The joke about being the only black guy in Maine too was great.
That was pretty good. Yeah, that was pretty funny. I don't know. I mean, there's definitely some enough. I mean, again, I haven't watched The Simpsons in over 20 years, as we were talking about. Like, other than Treehouse of Horror, it was a serviceable episode. I think that's about as much as I expected from it. Any other thoughts on this up?
I had a little, like, very, I don't even know if I'd call it King's Dominion. Just more of a realization I had for myself. All right. So at the end, or during the kids confronting Crusto, Homer has a power glove on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of power glove. And I would argue in this that it's weird because they have comic book guy kind of in the Ben role, but I'd argue that Homer is sort of a combination of Ben and Bill from the Losers Club.
And Mike.
Yeah. And exactly. And then so I was thinking, I'm like, oh, that's funny, because the dude who played Ben in the It TV miniseries, I remember he was in this movie called I'll Be Home for Christmas with Leslie Nielsen, and he uses a power glove in it. And I went down this rabbit hole, and then I realized, and this is crazy, so the guy who played Ben in It, who you guys met in Maine, obviously,
yeah.
is not the actor from I'll Be Home for Christmas, is not the actor from Heavyweights, he's not the actor who plays Cosmo in the McKids commercials that I love so much. That is actually this other actor named Patrick LeBrecq. And I looked online, and there are other people who have confused these two. And it was just, it's not even Kings Dominion, it's like a Mandela effect. It was so weird. There were like Reddit threads about like, oh yeah, the kid from It was Cosmo from the McKids commercials, which I had always thought too, but it's not. So the kid from It was in It, and I think like Pete and Pete, right? I think he was in also, right? Wasn't he? Ben?
Oh, Wonder Years.
Wonder Years. Sorry, no, that's not it. Yeah. Was Fred Savage's friend in Wonder Years. And then this other guy, Patrick LeBrecq, who's kind of dropped off the face of the earth. No one knows where he is. He was all these other roles that I thought he was.
No one knows where he is.
It was really bizarre. For years, like, I'm glad I wasn't in Maine, because I would have been like, yeah, when you did the McKit, you were Cosmo. That's awesome. Like
that would have been a funny thing. Like, I don't know.
You'd probably laugh at it.
Or Cosmo from the Burger King, whatever. Is it, boy, McKit?
Not McKids. Different. These were flesh and blood kids.
I was thinking of the BK kids
were cartoons.
Constant listeners, this is, you have now entered Caffrey's mind.
I do the same thing, though. I thought the girl from Matchstick Men and Drag Me to Hell was Egg from Arrested Development.
That is true. Oh, you did think that for a while. Yeah.
So I do that all the time. And like my mind just automatically assumes it. It's the Mandela effect, you know, something that's true to you.
Before we wrap up, Mike, did we know that Stephen King turned down a cameo in this episode?
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes, he did. I read an interview with the showrunner and he said that, hold on, let me bring up the quote here. Yeah, they wanted King to play a gravedigger and do a voice cameo. And I think they thought, since he had done a voice back in season 12, that he would gladly do it again, and he turned it down.
That seems strange for him.
Nice. He's like, well, yeah, I don't really and then like he, comic book guy.
And he said, this is what the showrunner said.
More of a Lenny
said.
Guy.
He goes, well, you know, former guest star Stephen King declined to participate in this one. Yeah, he didn't want to do it. I don't know what his problem was. I don't think he quite, some of these authors, they don't understand that they have all the power. He's the brand. He must know that. He's Stephen King. So iconic. Like, I don't even think I have time to read all the books he's written in the rest of my life, let alone for one person to write all those books. So they sound a little annoyed that he didn't do it.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a little weird.
A little uncharitable, though.
Dude, he's an older man. Like, I know. He did it before. Like, it's not a big deal.
He doesn't need to either. I mean, that's crazy.
Right.
No. Yeah.
And then
it used to be like something of pride, you know, for an actor to be featured on the show. And now I feel like everyone's done it.
Now it's like, hey, next episode, Chris Hardwick is coming up. I can't wait.
Oh, God, that would kill me. I hate him.
I guess we succeeded where The Simpsons didn't this year. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow. Some shade.
Didn't want to be kidding. In an episode where they were making references to Bitcoin and or not Bitcoin, their poster and Homer's.
The crypto poster was kind of funny, just because there was a.
But then
a
the Reddit reference too. He's like, I spend all my time on Reddit, and I'm just like, these are just low bearing fruit jokes.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Sammy. Those jokes annoy me, and I think they're very easy and they're internet brain people. But I will say,
and I'm a Reddit user, like,
but just the idea of a crypto poster that says crypto with a babe in a bikini like sitting on a Corvette is very funny to me, because I want that poster and I will hang it in my room. But no, but they apparently wrote Stephen King to voice a quote unquote scary gravedigger who turns out to be a monster. But they said it was ultimately good for us because we didn't have time for that scene. I don't know what we would have cut, despite the fact that we're only telling one story in the 20 minutes and 40 seconds allotted. We barely fit it all in. We barely fit in part one in the vague past and part two in the vague present. So yeah, maybe like don't tell the whole story. Like just be funny.
I know. Seriously.
Right. Sorry, I'm being really catty. I didn't mean to like shit all over it. I didn't think it was bad by any means. I just thought it felt so different from I think what I love about The Simpsons. And but obviously Dan felt different, and so I think that's the thing is The Simpsons has so many tendrils in its ways that it appeals to people that I think you know, It's certainly not, you know, I certainly would never be one of those people that is like, all Latter-day Simpsons sucks. It just does not hit for me anymore, you know? Yeah.
Well, let's nose it, just to close this out. Quick noses. No final thoughts, just noses. What 1 to 5, what do you give?
A 2.5.
Two and a half?
2.5, yeah.
Caffrey?
I give it 4 out of 5.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. How about this? Well, we've got a
hey, look,
little
cheap
look,
it's
over
not
here.
My fault you guys aren't fans of Stephen King or The Simpsons. defender of both properties.
Maybe we just didn't get it.
Our Stephen King on Reddit.
What if this little bonus episode just destroys the podcast because we all get angry at each other?
I actually
it's
always
like, hey,
wonder.
Fuck you, man.
Because like, there's like, there on Doughboys, I mean, there's an episode where they get in like a vicious fight and like.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's from years ago, but.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you guys have disagreed on things. Before.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely.
The Dawn of the Dead story is my favorite.
That's our origin story, but yeah.
I mean, Nightmares and Dreamscape. We didn't get like combative with each other, but that was like definitely the most like I think clashing opinions we've had on the show.
I think the listeners love that episode. Those episodes.
Oh, yeah. I enjoy talking to someone that has a different opinion than me.
I really stoked we weren't on those.
Like, you see a different point of view. Also, that's what's fun about entertainment is that we can interpret it differently.
I know. That's yeah. I mean, we're at this 5 years in. If we can't accept the fact that we're different in opinions, then what are we doing this for? Jen, noses.
2.
Ooh. Oh,
fair.
Sorry.
Randall.
2 with the Tommyknocker on top, I guess.
The Tommy, all right, okay, that's fair.
I'll give it 2.5. I'm feeling generous.
Oh, wow.
Oh, thank you for your generous 2.5.
Just absolute venom. I think I'm going to go with 2. I think 2 is fair for me. Yeah, I mean, look, this is fun. I'm glad that we were able to do this. I was getting a little anxious because for a while, you know, it was impossible to figure out when this was going to run. Randall and I had been searching our emails for a date, and then we finally made it. I thought this was going to land next weekend, and so we were going to have to wait until November. But we managed to get this in. And, you know, as mixed as I am about the newer episodes, it's never a bad time to stop in Springfield. I still love this series. I still love going back. I'm going to be going to the Simpsons World this weekend.
Yeah, it should say something that there's a fucking theme park.
It's theme park, and we're going to have fun. Yes. It's going to be good times. But I think for you all, constant listeners, this is a fun little bonus Halloween treat. But don't go away, because on Friday, we're dropping our big old book episode on the Dark Tower 5, Wolves of the Cala.
Yeah.
And that should take us into November, where we're going to be staying on the path of the beam for Song of Susanna before finally reaching the tower in December with the final 7th book. Now, somewhere in there, we're going to have a long watch episode on The Mist. We're going to talk to a very familiar face, which we've recorded already. And, well, like my favorite John Ritter and Pam Dauber flick, stay tuned.
I think
until then, no.
Wait, really quick before we go, do we know what the anthology standard Treehouse of Horror that's going to come out in a few days? Do we know what it's parodying? Not another King thing,
yes.
I'm sure.
I hope not another
you
King
said
thing.
The Babadook, right?
The Babadook, Death Note, and Westworld.
Well,
there you have
so
it.
So maybe we'll get the names on that one. Then.
We might get the names. We're going to have to find the names. But
I hope so. No, I flagged that too, Sammy. I was like, where's James L. Brooks?
I
love seeing that.
Got super bummed. I look forward to that every time, and it bummed me out.
Well, hopefully it doesn't bum you all out this weekend, and hopefully the episodes we've got coming out don't bum you out either. Until then, we'll be seeing you over long days.
And
pleasant
nights.
Some hot friends. God, I got some hot friends. I got some hot friends. God, I got some hot friends. But you know you want somebody to treat you good.
This is the end of our show. For now. We hope you enjoyed this production. If you like our programming, consider searching for other bloody disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, and more.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology coming to Prime Video on April 25th. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the South Side Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, premiering on April 25th.